Okay, today is Monday, May 22nd, 2023, and my mind is still on yesterday, Shane. I promised you when we meet again, you'll see it'll very fascinating material because Vic was troubled after class. How can you eat tarfish? And he's absolutely right, but Vic, wait till the next year. Yomo was troubled. How can you eat tafis? Even if it's mutter, but it affects the Guf Chaim. You follow? Each one had questions. And the story I told you with the not to use all 12 dishes, I'll clarify it. I wish I would have had the knowledge I have today when I was studying with the Rav. What are we talking about? 65 years ago or so? Yeah, 65, even a little more. And, wow, now I have knowledge, a little bit knowledge. Baruch Hashem. Okay, but leave that first. I'm very excited because I'm going to show you something when we meet next with the Sunday class that has to torture you if you have chumras that the earlier generation didn't have. But leave that for next time we meet. Now, I'm not going to give class Sunday after Shavuos, simply it's too hard. They have 2 days chag, and in America it's certainly too hard for people to make Havdalah and an hour later turn on Rakefet for a Shia. But we'll pick up Monday, next Monday, then the 2 weeks afterwards on normal Sheyurim, and then June, that, in other words, I believe the last year is June 13th. June 15th, Chris disappears. This building turns into summer programs, and while Rakefet will be around, he'll have a mask on his face because all I will be doing from June 15th till the next year, Be'ezrat Hashem in Elul, is securing myself and writing beyond my regular starim. I have to write. I have to write. Okay. Now, regarding the issue that we've long raised and we don't have a black and white answer. The Gemara remains Sinai v'Yalka Harim. So, and Rav Grunstein reminded me that in the biography of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, the one that was put out by Art Scroll, and it's not Making of a Gadol. Making of a Gadol is much bigger and much different. But the one that was put out by Art Scroll, Rav Nosson Kamenetsky also played a role, giving him a lot of information. But it seems they came to, in Slabodka, a young man finished an entire Masechta very quickly. And Rav David Leibowitz, who was an Adam Gadol already in Slabodka, later the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas and then of Chafetz Chaim, so he said, Das heißt nicht gelernt. In other words, in the literature world, they didn't buy the Bekiyot. And I'm reading now a biography of Rabbi Meshulam David Soloveitchik. Fascinating, because he's married to a lady whose native language is English. Rabbi Shmuel Orbach was also, his wife too, her native language was English. And fascinating, he's Kula Torah, that. And I can understand why he had a big impact on American Talmidim, including Rabbi Yitzchak Lichtenstein. It is Rabbi Meshulam David, it's Rabbi Mufak. And fascinating little biography. And there too, you see that he's not happy with Bekiyot. He says younger people, if they can learn 40, 50 daf a year, but understand it well, later you do Bekiyot. And this is the literature approach, no two ways about it. Again, life moves on, and as the Rav cried in that famous Tshuva Drasha, I wish I could speak to my father for 5 more minutes, to my wife, etc. So I wish I could speak to my Rebbe, Rav Noach Bornstein, about the year he won the $50, 1930, with all the Bekiyot, you know, the famous story with the Blasi Yehuda Finkel. I'd like to get his take on it because he was a total risker. Now, I also want to show you what people go through. This little demonstration is outside my Talmud's home in the Muncie area, Gedalia Friedenberg, who I put you in touch with. And this is a satma holding up a big sign. Eden dafin warten in Golis, bis Hashem Yisbarach allein wird uns auslesen. You know Yiddish, Baruch Hashem, someone knows Yiddish, darf nicht reden Goyish, but for the rest here, this Yiddish, this is Mamalush, and he says Jews have to work in Golis until only the Ribbono Shel Olam can redeem them. No, relax. Vic, relax. I just gave Mark permission to reprint 1 million copies of my refutation of Satma. I'm working on it. I'm thinking how I can get 1 million copies out, because now it's in a favof in a publication. But I want to tell you something else. I was right and you were wrong. Meaning, a year ago when I finished Satma, so if you recall, I said, what will be with Satma? And I, various ideas, my machlokes with Rabbi Shalom Gold, etc. And I said, but one fear is that they can become a sect unto themselves. And you all disagreed with me. No, they're going to remain Jewish and remain Jewish. So I just want to tell you, I got a letter from my dear Gedalia. And Gedalia writes, he went outside and he spoke with him. And he says, why are you demonstrating? The people here observe Yom HaTzmut, this area. Why do you have to harm fellow Jews? We're Jews just like you. I put on tefillin. I'm wearing tzitzis. I learned the Daf Gemara. So the guy says, no, we are not Jews like you. We are a different religion. Satma, quote. So Rakefet was not wrong. You might have a fringe element that will leave Yiddishkeit plain and simple. This is mental illness. And with mental illness, you have no idea where you can wind up. So this picture, and here's the letter, here's the whole conversation in this letter that he had with this Jew. Now, coming to our Rabbi Meir Shapiro, it is amazing what's available on the internet. I have to say I'm overwhelmed. Again, I don't know the internet. Yesterday I discovered a new chumrah. I come back to my office and the shade is pulled. And you're almost putting up my shia. We pulled the shade if a woman comes to see me, you follow me, to avoid any problem of yichud. And Yomo gives me a whole thing from Rav Mordechai Willick and Adam Gadol. Yomo's a fine Jew, but he's not Rav Mordechai Willick. And he doesn't want, you have to put this up, because when you watch the internet, naked women, pornography can appear, and therefore people should see what you're watching. Yomo, I want you to know I didn't sleep too well last night. Ribbono Shel Olam, I was raised in a world where a Jew had a cheskat kashrut. Maybe I'm living in the wrong world. I don't know.
Why do we need yichud with women?
Because yichud with women, the Gemara says, a person is always susceptible to arayot. All right, I can boast that. I can boast that in my life I never was. I boast. I'm 85. I had one girlfriend, one wife, one woman who turned me into a mensch. Don't want to say an extra word. But I can't believe the. But I don't know. I don't. The worst thing I did on my internet this morning was I saw the Yankees take the third game from Cincinnati. Yomo, is Cincinnati a good team or a bad team?
I have no idea.
You don't know? You watch all these statistics, no? Yeah.
In the States,
no, not all.
The psychologists and the Rabbanim who were in the trenches, the people come to them.
Okay, Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, Lieutenant Colonel, agrees with Yomo that you have to avoid yichud with the computer. But I just want to tell you, what two students sent me from the show. Do you know that you can find on the computer, Natan, a record of the nigunim that Rav Meir Shapiro composed? And I tell you that. I think Yomo has it. If anyone wants the link, write to Yomo, and Yomo will send you the link. Yomo613@gmail.com. And I tell you, it's overwhelming. And his nigunim, some of them became well-known songs. Some are right. He's not Shlomo Le Kalbach, but he has a better track record than Shlomo Le Kalbach. I'll leave it at that. Now, regarding the library, a Talmud of mine, Baruch Ham Zul in Kew Garden Sills, I wish he'd be in Eretz Yisrael, but what can you do, the Engadisha, they're slow in coming in Aliyah. Here, he has a sefer. Baruch, when you listen, tell me if I understood you correctly. This sefer, original expression for Sifriya. Sifriya is a modern word. And it says, sefer shitama kubeset, misspelled. Look at shita, look how it's spelled. The yud is missing, right or wrong. Al mesechet baba kama, nidvat, Zalman Bachnach, I can't read the name, Be'il Ludge, and he donated. And here in the sefer is his stamp. Here, Michael Zalman the Reb Tzvi Banad. What unbelievable what comes out and what survives. And there are plenty of serum like this that, as we spoke about last week, wound up in Yad Rav Herzog and Hechel Shlomo. Now, another Talmud, remember we were talking about Reb Yisrael Friedman, the Chukdva Rebbe, the Rebbe of Reb Meir Shapiro, and we said that Chukdva today has two centers, the big one in Manchester and something in Antwerp. This is Manchester. They just built a new shtibl, and it's modeled after the one in Poland. You see the building? This there's a video. He sent me a link, a video of the Rebbe. He doesn't call himself the Rebbe. He's a Yisrael Friedman. He's the direct descendant. He calls himself the Rabbi. Very charismatic. And this is the inside of the shul. It's not a major shul, but it's an oversized shtibl, and they're now raising funds to expand it. So Baruch Hashem, Torah lives on, and it's very moving to see the continuity. Okay, but now let me come back. We're at page 344. Today is the heart of Morty, your question will be answered, and we'll touch upon interesting questions that will haunt us for years to come when we do the Litvishi Yeshiva as well. There's no question that Rav Meir Shapiro is one of a kind. He was an innovator. Whenever you innovate, you're going to attract support, you're going to attract critics. It's part of life. As I alluded to yesterday in his Shlomo Lariskin, we were classmates with by the Rav. I'm older. I may be a year. I must be 2 years older at the most, but maybe a year and a half. And I saw Shlomo even sitting in front of the Rav. Everyone knew he was a unique speaker. You know, this was not the normal Talmud. And he goes into the rabbinate. You all know the story. I'm an ear and eye witness to the story, how Dr. Belkin comes to him and says to Schlemmler, who was then Steve Riskin, it's a group of people have a conservative temple organized on the Upper West Side, and they came to me. They're not happy with the rabbis they get from the seminary. They want to, why you rabbi? And do you know this? I don't want to waste time, but if you don't know it, it's a classic story. And Shlomo says, I got to consult, you know, my Rebbe. I'll give you an answer next week. So he goes to the Rav, and the Rav tells him, it's not for you, conservative shteller. Goes back to Dr. Belkin. Dr. Belkin says, I'll be in touch with you again. And here I'm only guessing, but Chaim, you can bet 100-1 in my favor that I'm absolutely correct. Reb Shmuel Belkin says to the Rav, whom he called Beryl, And he says to the Rebbe, was imetach? Beryl, du verstehst nicht, was kann sein da? Was war Geld, das kann er reinbringen zu die Yeshiva? He says to the Rebbe, well, you don't understand, the Stella, what money you can bring in? So the Rebbe calls in, the rest of the story I'm not guessing, the Rebbe calls in Rizkin and he says to him, Steve, I was testing your spiritual tenacity. Vic, you can write word by word. That's what Steve Rizkin told me back in Chveis 1961, 60, whatever it was. So the Rebbe says like this, all right, you'll take the shtela, but you won't daven there. You'll daven before, you'll come, and you'll conduct, and you'll speak, and you'll teach, and you'll be their spiritual advisor. You won't call yourself rabbi, but see what you can accomplish. And I got to say, to Steve's credit, he didn't take a salary. He began, I can't take a salary, I'm only a spiritual, I'm not the rabbi, etc., etc. And as they say, the rest is history. And he was an innovator, you know. He attracted support. I remember RCA Rabbanim, Elder Rabbanim, Rabbanim who went through hell and fire to keep Yiddishkeit going in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, they loved him. They would come to hear his lectures. Oh, they loved him. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Moshe Feinstein, the Rav, I mean, Steve. On the other hand, you already heard criticisms, what type of mechitza, you know, when you walked in to the shul, the original mechitza, if you didn't know it was a mechitza, you didn't know what it was. On the other hand, I have to be Melamed Skutvik. The mechitza in Rabbi Young's shul was no bigger. You follow me? I mean, to me, I don't understand it. Rabbi Young, Rabbi Dr. Leo Young, the Upper West Side, the mechitza was no bigger. When I took over Maple, built the first shul, Maple with Hathara. So the original mechitza was over 50 inches, but not too much more. So I remember Rav Moshe Bick asked about me, and he said, oh, I have getracht as Rothkopf is a frumer, you know, like, but the rabbinate, you don't know what an achievement that was, a mechitza. By the time I left the shul, the mechitza was 65 inches, but the upper few inches were glass, you follow? And not one-way glass. One-way glass never works unless lechatchila you put it in to be one-way glass with the lighting adjusted. When you come later and do it, you wind up that the women can't see anything. It just it's a problem. I know in Young Israel, the Winfield, they had that problem. But I the mechitza built up today already. If you go to Maplewood, the shul has a mechitza kasha lefi standards of Chabad. You follow? So Baruch Hashem. But you're always going to have people who will love you, will criticize you. This is why when I spoke about yesterday and the last week with the Bekesha, I remember in the Haredi press, it caused a storm. Rabbi Rizkin, where's the Bekesha Shabbos? So Mimadiv Shach, those who support him say, our Rebbe is from, he wears a Bekesha. Those who criticize him, vi kumta se'em, how does it happen to Steve Rizkin that he wears a Bekesha? But that guy Rakefit solved all problems yesterday. I added one word about Rabbi Rizkin. He was an actor, a showman. And the Bekesha fits right in with his showmanship. And I can tell you stories. I saw him in action. I was like sitting there, wow, this guy is unbelievable. His daughter, who was my student, gets married. And marries a YU guy from Petach Tikva, wonderful family. I mean, they're happily married many decades later. And under the chuppah, Steve is giving a drasha. And he says, and what attracted my daughter to the young Chatan was they loved the same song. It's from the rabbis. It's Asukala Akleinim. You're familiar with that song? And under the chuppah, together with his son-in-law, he breaks into it. Hundreds of people are there, smiling, laughing, crying. But what a performance. Wow. And by the way, it is a beautiful song. And I'm zeicher that one of the people singing it became a very close Talmud of mine, Yossi Sonnenblick, if you know what I'm talking about. So, Baruch Hashem. Okay, so I'm just saying this, that Reb Meir Shapiro, with all that he did, and then the money issue. See, money, you see what's going on with the government today. I said something yesterday, I don't know if you're up to date and understand what the Rebbe was saying. If only our politicians would keep quiet. I get aggravated. We're leaving the government, we're bringing down the government, if we don't, there's that, the... We have a government that is a government that believes in Torah, believes in Eretz Yisrael. What are you bringing down? What are you... Money. All right, there's not enough money. You have to compromise. We're not a country of Rothschilds. We're a country of regular Jews. Wealthier, middle class, lower class, etc. Money is always a problem. And that story I told you last week with Rav Kalmanovich, ripping him apart, Rav Avram Kalmanovich, and Rav Menachem Zemba saving him, see, that's quite a story. But that story, if Rav Nassim had written it in Making of a Gadol, they put him in Cheirum. But that's life. This is life. This is true. It's sad, but it's true. Money remains a problem. And here along comes someone with grandiose ideals, and if they laughed at Rabbi Revel in America, remember, open up the Revel book. If they laughed at Rabbi Revel in America for announcing a $5 million campaign 100 years ago, they laughed at him. Alach HaTama V'Kama, you're going to laugh at Rav Meir Shapiro in Poland announcing a multi-million dollar campaign to build a temple and a yeshiva and a swimming pool and a mikvah. All right, the man suffered. Now, what's your problem, Ben? You're shaking your head.
No, I just scratched myself.
Scratching your beard, all right. The majority here have beards. What can I do? I'm from the, you got to understand, from a different generation. It's hard for you to comprehend. Steve Riskin never had a beard. Reb Aaron Lichtenstein never had a beard. We were raised, good, I'll tell you one more story, which, again, I'm the ear with, I was sitting here, the Rebbe is sitting here. After class, Eric Zimmer, do you know a name Yitzchak Zimmer mean anything to you? He's one of the top graduates in my, a little bit before my time, but we were together in the Sanhedrin Shir. He was a Yekka, a terrific individual. Eric and a Yekki, don't forget that, it's very important. Eric comes over to the Rav before Pesach and says, Rebbe, are you allowed to shave Cholamoy Pesach? It's a yuck asking a question and asking the Rav, who's clean shaven outside of his Van Dyke. And the Rav says to him, I'd like to know a little of your practice. How often do you shave? So Eric says, every day. So the Rav says, so Cholamoed, you're an Avelus? Why can't you shave? What are you talking about? And yeah, I got to understand, for us not to shave, for me, not the shave is torture. That's all I can tell you. My sons-in-law don't shave. My grandchildren don't shave. My great-grandchildren won't shave. But for me, I'm in a time warp. But you have to understand it. So Rav Meir Shapiro, now you have to deal with down-to-earth questions. All right, you establish a school. How do you run a school? How do you accept students? How do you have gradations? Do you have gradations? Who gives the shiur? How do you know the students know something? Okay. So here, let me talk about Lakewood in my time, so you should not be shocked when we come back to Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. Lakewood in my time, in order to get in, you had to talk and learning with Rabbi Aaron Kotler. That itself was an experience that remains with you for eternity. I think I write about it. I'm sure I write about it in Washington. I was just, you know, I had a good head when I was a kid. As Chazal say, "Bimei chupi," when I'm sharp, harifut, It's a teenager. So, Chaboyska chapta Masha. I asked the question, what are the B'chini? I remember it was Kedushin and the Mashur, and I asked the Masha's question, and I gave a good answer. Rabbaran's eyes lit up like Sifrei Torah. The pupils became like Eitzei Chaim. And if you were a litvish, it gives B'chini one question, answer like that, you're in. There's no two ways about it. It's not a great... Now, Lakewood, in my time, there was one Rosh Yeshiva. That was it. Rav Nosson Vachfoglu, Mashgiach. The whole yeshiva centered about Rav Aaron. He gave shiur twice a week. And... everyone came to shiur. There was no other shiur. This was it. All right. Afterwards, not everyone understood the entire shiur. So you had chaburas which would review. If you still couldn't comprehend something, you made an appointment to speak with Rabbi Yankel Schiff. Yankel Schiff was a kid born in the Bronx. His father worked in the Bronx. Father had in Hunts Point Market. His father was some sort of wholesaler. It might have been with vegetables, fruit, but normal Bronx home. And Yankel Schiff was like Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I always compared the two. They all had very large foreheads. And to me, a large forehead is a sign of a genius. You follow me? I wind up, Baruch Hashem, I have great-grandchildren with large foreheads. I hope they'll use it in learning and be Gedolei Torah. And Rabbi Yankel Schiff, he should live and be well. Who does he marry afterwards? They make a shidduch long distance, the Brisker Rav's daughter. Rabbi Yankel Schiff, I think, is the only one alive yet of the sons and one sons of Rav Velvula. And you may know what you're spoken, but the whole yeshiva centered about Rav Aaron. Now, were there bechinot? No, there were no bechinot. But the mashgiach kept track who keeps learning, who keeps the Siddurim. He spoke in learning with Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron got to know you. And that's the way the yeshiva worked. Shlomo Lekabach never took a bechina. David Hartman never took a bechina. But they were known as among the lions, Ariyot HaChabura, among the lions of the yeshiva. Now, that was Lakewood. Lakewood develops, I don't have to tell you, I know a little bit of the inside stories because I've been quite friendly with some of the people I was in Lakewood with. And then I was in the Rabbinate and I always was makatoga to Lakewood. I raised funds for Lakewood and I spoke for Lakewood. And then in 67 I told you the Hanukkah fundraiser for Lakewood, I spoke, and Rav Shmuel Cutler, was a little bit differed with what I said. I was going in Aliyah, and I was all heated. Maybe it was Hanukkah 68, not Hanukkah 67, Hanukkah 68. And I spoke about the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that Chizkiyahu HaMelech could have been Mashiach, but the door didn't say Shirah. And I said, and I quoted the sources, not for now, take me a half hour, an hour, that in every generation there are people who could have been Mashiach. You see, Bar Kokhba, the Rambam, look what he says, but the generation has to be worthy. And I said, our generation is going to prove itself worthy because we're all going in Aliyah, etc. And Reb Shneur said to me, if they have good fight, what can I do? I'm speaking more Yiddish than English lately, but I can't help it. After the Rav visited me when I was so sick, Yiddish is gekommen. It all came back to me. So Rav Shneur says to me, darf gut verstehen der Rambam. You follow me? You got to understand the Rambam very well, Mark. That's what he said to me. I understood. He wasn't so happy that I proposed picking up Lakewood and YU and bringing them to Yerushalayim. Now, what happened with Yachal, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, there were regular tests to get in. See, this was unheard of. And his concept of what Yachal would become was not a yeshiva for ordinary students. It would be a, like, I'll put it this way, a postgraduate school for the elite. And here I'll let you in on a secret. We're sitting here in Gris campus. Why are you in Israel? All right. I've done some good things in my life. I don't want to say it's the best I've ever done, but I did get this campus from Mr. Gris. Now, Mr. Grissom burdened himself to me. He was very upset. The Rev wasn't coming. What did he have in mind with Gris campus? I'm quoting Mr. Joe Gris now, Zichrona Levracha. He said to me, I want this school here in Israel to be like the graduate school in Princeton where Albert Einstein taught. He said, I want it to be special. His idea here was that the classes would be something you don't have in Borough Park, in Williamsburg, in Washington Heights, in Lakewood. It would be like the Princeton Graduate School, unique. All right. I hope my classes live up to what he dreamt of. But that's what the Meir Shapiro had in mind. And this is why any other yeshiva, what was the attitude? Torah Mesorah has fought with this issue, has been challenged by this issue. What do you do in the United States, Torah Mesorah, you have all these schools, elementary schools, high schools, etc., and you have a kid you want to throw out. Throw a kid out? You're risking his spiritual life. All right, the kid did something wrong. Do you want to throw him out? The Chazon Ish deals with this in his Igrot. It's a tremendous problem. And the Chazon Ish, halacha lemaisa, you know his psak, that you don't throw a kid out unless the kid is badly influencing others. You follow how I'm stating it? This is essentially what the Chazon Ish paskin. Meir Shapiro, see, any other yeshiva in Poland in the 1920s, the 1930s, Slabodka, Mir, a kid wanted to come, as long as the yeshiva had the money to take in another 100 kids, they were overjoyed to take in. Yachal turned kids down. They gave an exam. You couldn't get in without meeting with the Maram Shapiro, Rav Meir Shapiro. You had a talk and learning with him. And until today, see, this is what life is about. I told you stories about the Rav. You'll open up Rav Heschel Schechter's writings. You'll find similar stories, different versions. You'll open up Rabbi Riskin, Steve Riskin, Schleimler, Talking to God, whatever the name of his memoir is. You'll find the same, different versions. See, this is life. We're only human beings. That's why the Rav, one time we had Bechinat, and we had stencils, like, I don't know how to describe it, you have mimeograph machines, stencils, it's not the Xerox. Xerox is a million times better. And one time the Rav found we had stenciled notes of one of the Talmidim. The Rav was hysterical. Oh, you don't know what went on. We had a promise we'll never do it again. And he says, look, when I say you interpret, misinterpret, people will find it and hold me responsible. And by the way, when reading Reb Meshulam David's biography, you'll see a critique of the stencils they did of the Grizz, that it's not exactly what he said. If I'm up with the memoir literature of students, and this I have to give all the credit to Rabbi Dr. Slavin, that he interviewed so many people in the 90s, the early part of this century, he would go to the New Year's Chabotnik, he had to be at 770 at least once a year. He still spoke with the old-timers. you get various descriptions of what you had to know to pass the Bechena. Rav Baruch Schneerson, does that name mean anything to you? It's the Chabin's son-in-law. It's Rosh Yeshivin Chabin. He's a cousin to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He was a Gadol Shebe Gedolim, Zeicher Tzadik Levracha. Rav Schneerson, he claims you had to know 200 Daf Gemara by heart. Period. You knew 200 Daf, you could get in. You read more memoir literature, no, you had to know how to speak in learning 200 Daf Gemara. See, that was like YU, the Oral Bechinah. You know what I'm talking about? Right before my time, Baruch Hashem, they stopped the Oral Bechinah literally a year or two before I had to get smicha. It switched to writing. All right, writing. You came into the auditorium at 9 o'clock. They gave out the questions, proctors, booklets to write in. You know when I finished the Bechina? 3 o'clock, you had to be finished. I wasn't finished by 3. So we went into Dean Zah's house across the street and we finished writing there. 5 o'clock, I gave him the Bechina. And we wrote, we knew. Who marked the Bechina? The Baron Lichtenstein. Used to get 2 grades. 1 grade, a number, whether you were right or wrong, and 1 grade for Havana. So like a great achievement, let's say I got 92 on the Bechina, but I got an Aleph for Havana. That was an achievement. So the Oral Bechina, what did you have to know? Yoredeya and 100 Daf Gemara. That they could ask you questions, not to know it by heart. And you should know when you walked in, so the Amerikanshik children, kids, icefabs, wise guys, call them what you want. So you walk in, yeah, I know 100 Daf Gemara. Tainit, bracha, you follow, you already got 100 Daf. So I know you to pay us a Rabbi Goldblum, Zeicher Tzadik of Rabbi Israel Goldblum, it's a son here, Rabbi Menachem Goldblum. Rabbi Israel Goldblum is Ayura Peyesha. He walked in and the Rav yells at him, you're a European, you studied in Europe yet, you're taking the easy Gemaras? I expect from you Baba Batra, Baba Metzia, Baba Kama, Yavamat, Ktuvat. he told me, the Rav told him off, Azevia Americana, Kumpen der Ein, Azeltene Gemaras. And so, I cannot tell you which is correct. 200 by heart, 200 written in learning, but there's one footnote here. One student, he gives all the, you got to see the doctorate, he gives all the sources. One kid came, a young kid, I think he was 14, 15, and he tells Rav Meir Shapiro, I don't know 200 Daf Gemara yet, but I do know Masechet Nedarim with the Ran and the Rush by heart. Rav Meir Shapiro starts talking with him. Kid was in a minute flat. You follow? A Talmud Chacham, when you come and can redden and learn, and that's it. In modern Hebrew, there's an expression, Kanita Oto. You buy him. It's hard for me to say it in English, but it's an expression I learned in the army. I would give a certain lecture, tell a certain story, they come over, Kanita Otano, Ach, Masipa Ze, Kanita Otano. The kid was in. No two ways about it. So you see right away that this was unheard of. Here, he compares it, Rabbi Slavin compares it to Brunovich. And he calls up the memoir literature on Brunovich. There was a Rabbi Nitznik in Montreal. He learned, 15 years old, he dreamt about going to Brunovich. 100 boys descended upon Brunovich from Elchanan Wasserman. There was no money. No money. He remained there. He couldn't get into the yeshiva. He sat and learned in a Beit Medrash and pushed himself to talk and learning with Rabbi Ochanan. Finally, he got in. And what was the bechina there? Interesting. Rabbi Ochanan says, all right, I'll give you a bechina. And this is a litvish bechina. He opens up a Gemara and he tells him, you see this daf? In 2 hours, I'm going to ask you questions on the daf. It's an entirely different bechina. Yoma, what are they looking for? Your ability to learn. Not interested in Bikiyat, not interested in not you know, not interested in what you didn't learn. Do Kens learn it or Ken Nish?
When I went to Lakewood, that's the Bechina they gave.
That Bechina fits the Lakewood. That's a Litvisha Bechina. That's exactly. This is fits for Lakewood 100%. See, Lakewood developed way beyond a normal yeshiva, which really leads to a question, can a yeshiva have tens of thousands of students? It becomes a yachid kala. It's not really a yeshiva. But you might answer that the people who come to Lakewood know how to learn. What you have is an atmosphere with thousands learning. Mir right now is undergoing a whole reformation because Rabbi Shasriel, he became so dominant that it's like a focal yeshiva within a big tent of learning. And they're rearranging everything. They're the minyanim, they're all time reading. Wow, what's going on? But you see, when I in Lakewood, when I was honored by them, and I appreciate that it was a moment in time, I've told you that I had Gilui Eliyahu there. That's a different story with Ayakat. That's not for now. But I saw the Rosh Yeshiva. Remember, each one gives a shiur once a month. So it's not a Rosh Yeshiva in the sense like Rabbi Aaron. All right, it's a showmanship of what you can achieve, but it's not a yeshiva where you have a Rebbe that you relate to on a weekly basis, many times on a daily basis. It's a different story what developed there. But what you're telling me, Ben, is exactly my point. A Litvishi yeshiva, du kennst or du kennst nicht. If you have the ability to learn a daf in 2 hours, I mean, talking Rashi, Tosfot, what's the machlekes, what's the understanding? Oh, welcome, Rav Meir Shapiro. It's already a different teher, a different gang, a different Derech, a different path, Pekiot, Polish, Chassidut, and here you have memoir literature. A student arrives and he gives Meir Shapiro 5-6 letters of recommendation. Big Rabbanim, Rav Meir Shapiro pushes it aside, starts talking with him and learning. Ah, this kid is terrific. He hugs him. He says, du bist meiner, you're mine. You follow? It's not the letters didn't impress him, but the kid's ability to answer what he knew, 200 duff on his fingertips. Wow, this kid made it without any problem. Now, Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, who's one of the earliest Talmidim, and maybe I would say one of the most famous, if not the most famous Talmud, he survived the Holocaust. You'll see my essay, my little book coming out in Chakira. So you'll see, I quote a great deal from Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung. You'll see, it's a very moving. Very moving story with Reb Chaim Oyser, and wow. While I was writing it, I was crying like a baby. You can't help it. It's Gedolei Yisrael. It's Torah. It's our life. It's our neshama. It's everything. We Jews, it's It's our only value here. I mean, you understand that people think I'm a baseball freak. By the way, Rabbi Wiener, Mark Goldman writes about me in baseball. Did you see it in the book, My Sarab? You didn't get that far yet. But that's, push it, that's mental health. Mental health, that's the way I view it. So, but Rabbi Pinchas Hirschsprung, wherever he traveled in Poland, he kept his nose up, totally breathing, totally sensing who has a mind for Yachal. And he brought in students. And he brought in students. Some of them were like him, had photographic memories. And this is the way they accepted students. Now, there was something else about Yeshivat Yachal. Who? What?
Hirschsprung.
There's Hirschberg, there's Hirschsprung. He was Reb Pinchas Hirschsprung.
P-R-U-N-G.
Yeah, you can Google him. You'll see. He was Rav in Montreal. He built the Beis Yaakov. He married a Canadian woman who helped him totally adjust to Canada. They had many children. One of them is married to my student. And he, Montreal today, you should know, is the city with the highest percentage of Shmirat Shabbat of any city in the Western Hemisphere. Montreal is number one. They say it may be over 50%. And there are many reasons why. Rabbi Hirschsprung, Chabad, the Sfadim who went there, that didn't come in Aliyah because of what they view as the hardships in Israel. So Montreal, you speak French, the Sfadim, Tunisia, Algeria, they all speak French. France, no problem. You go into the shopping malls there, you'll find many stores, Shomer Shabbos, that they're owned by business people, mainly Sfadim. You have the Tusha Rebbe there, his son today is Rebbe, suburb of Montreal. It's very, very fascinating to see the amount. The only hardship there is the weather. Montreal, if you're going from France to Montreal, it's not easy, because Montreal is exactly like Moscow, weather-wise. And that is very difficult. It's colder than Toronto. Toronto is colder than New York, but not by much. But Montreal is really something. But money is money, and everyone adjusted to Montreal. Okay, but there's something else about when we talk of Yachal. Yeshiva University, all right, is my days at top yeshiva, reads the Rabbeim. Every student can dress the way he wanted. In my time, you just dressed normal. There was no dress code. And, the Rav wore a normal suit, generally brown, which is his favorite color, at times gray. I never remember him in black or blue. In my time, never ever. As long as his wife was alive and he was functioning, he loved brown. That's why I chose the color for my two volumes on Rebbe, brown, except there's a slight difference in the brown, so you can differentiate volume one to volume two. But, you know, if you keep the volumes a long time, the sun beats down on it, they wind up looking the same. Terev Das in my time, Chaim Berlin in my time, absolutely no dress code. Lakewood in my time, there was no dress code. Only thing is you wore a hat when you davened. A hat can be any type of hat, a cap, this type of hat, that type of hat. No one dared to wear a black hat. The only one in Lakewood, you're aware of this? The only one was Rav Aaron Cutler. He wore a black hat. The Mashkiach, Rav Hochvogel, Rav Nassim, no. Blue hat, a gray hat, not a black hat. Only Rabbi Aaron wore a black hat. There's no dress code. In Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, if you didn't dress Hasidish, you couldn't get in. Reb Meir Shapiro, this is a Hasidish yeshiva, and there has to be a Hasidish dress. And this is why he was shocked. You know, the story with Meir, again, it's anecdotal, but I've heard the story so many times from so many different people, I think it may be absolutely true. He came to Meir, and he was shocked. They're wearing modern clothes. Worse than that, they sits it, they're not sticking out. You know this story? So he asked the wise guy in Meir, you know, there were plenty of wise guys. They were looking at Reb Meir Shapiro, who knows what he knows. A Hasidish, you know, to them it was Arujan, a Chosid, a Chotkova. They were laughing, cynical. I had Rebbeim from Litta. I know about their cynicism. So I don't have to mention names, but the Rabbi Ruchem Gerelik, he won a prize once. Wow, his cynicism could break the ceiling. Rabbi Noach Bornstein was just as cynical, but still ahead, quietly. So he was very upset. The tzitzis are not sticking out. So he asked, what's going on here? Gaitnish with an abakamfish, they don't wear enough. So this wise guy says to him, well, there are boys here who can't afford to buy tzitzit, so we don't want to embarrass them. None of us think our tzitzit out. So when Reb Meir Shapiro got back, he sent a set of tzitzit to the kids who don't wear their tzitzit out. Yes, Mark?
At what point did the literature switch to the black?
To you know, no, it's very simple. If you look at World War II, the Litvish world was almost totally wiped out. The Hasidic world survived to a certain degree. Percentage-wise, Hasidim and Litvakim were killed by Hitler. Why did one survive and the other not? Anyway, a lot of research claims that the Litvish were more prone to assimilation. The Hasidim, those that remained frum, okay? More remained frum. I give you a simple example. It's my grandmother's yard site today. My mother's mother. I said Kaddish last night, I said Kaddish this morning, I'll finish the Kaddish at Mincha. This grandmother, through her, got the greatest jichus in the world. Rabbi Revel's my cousin. The Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron is my cousin, David Cohen. My nephew, Dr. Zev's son, a big Rosh Yeshiva down south. The genes in our family, it's unbelievable. What we've just think out, Rabbi Revel, Rabbi Cohen, my nephew, yours truly. How much Torah we have taught, how many Talmidim we have inspired. This is my grandmother, the Kalvariski family. She's a Kalvariski. So she comes to America, a Litvisha. My grandfather learned in the Luzhin, her husband. They meet in America, teenagers. They fell by the wayside here. And now I can understand, I remember, I fell by the wayside there, I should say. I told you that, 6 children. My mother was the only one that had real Jewish feeling. How it was a miracle. A nes min shamayim. You know what I say, that there's no such thing as Balei Tshuva. It's your forebears say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shelo yidach menu nidach, give us something that continues. And I remember, and I didn't understand that at the time, Morty, listen carefully. My mother's youngest brother gets engaged to a girl from the Bronx. The East Bronx. And what did her father do? Women didn't work when I was growing up. What did her father do? Had a non-kosher butcher shop. And I remember my grandfather saying to my grandmother in front of me, guess what, zet was uns ist getroffen, see what happened to us in America, how much we have fallen down that our son is marrying the daughter of a treif butcher shop. Chassidim. And this was not Holocaust, but chassidim. You had shtiblach, you had varimkeit. Something remained more. Now, you start analyzing. America, it's the 1940s, it's the 50s. We have the nucleus. We want more. We want Yiddishkeit. We want Torah. I don't know if they made the cheshbon logically, but emotionally, look at the Hasidim. They dress differently. It helps them remain good Jews. And slowly but surely, the uniform, the tzitzit. Who heard of getting tzitzits and droysen, tzitzit out? Don't want to tell you what, I cannot tell you what Rav Yeruchim Gerelli except the Chaim Nashman. He's the one kid in yeshiva in my time. His father was a Hasidish Sheikher. I can see his father standing in front of my eyes. And Nashman wore his tzitzit out. What Yeruchim Gerelli gave him? Vulgarity, tzitzit out. He kissed the mezuzah. Rabbi Yeruchim kissed the mezuzah. I can't repeat it. It's being recorded. Too many people will hear it over the world. But you follow? It was rare. And you know, it became of Chaim Nashman. 50 years, he was the chazan in the biggest conservative temple in Detroit. What are you saying?
Maybe that cost him.
Maybe that cost him. I don't know if it cost it. He married his... Baruch Hashem, two of his children were my students. They're from. The one who wasn't my student is a daughter. She's a rabbi of a shul near JTS, Orthodox shul, the shul that was begun in the home of Professor Finkelstein when he could no longer walk the shul. That shul, it's named Eliezer, something in his memory, and she's the spiritual leader there. That, and she said, I think she went to Mechala, if I'm not mistaken, but or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was after my time in Mechala. I had one daughter in Mechala, and I had a son in BMT, and they were from kids, Baruch Hashem. But then it began gradually. And then monkey, you see, it works. No, everyone copies. I once had two students come over to me here when the Kollel still attended my classes with zest, and they give me Musar. Why did you go on Aliyah? Had you remained in America, why you would have had normal people? What we're putting up with this Rebbe and that Rebbe, and the Chveish closing the shades when you turn on the internet, and I said to them, you guys are idiots. Had I remained in America, I'd be like everyone else. Understand, you go to Israel, all right, you become a different Jew, different knowledge, different understanding, and much more emunah and mesirat nefesh, period. But the change was, you want another example to prove I'm right? Ben, go open the internet, go to yutorah.org, look up a guy named Rakefet, find the 1 year he lectured on Rav Yitzchak Chutner. There's the example, Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner in the 1930s was, as every other Rebbe, normal, Americanized, speaking English, totally with it. Zionist, Talmud of Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook. Get to Rav Huttner in the 1980s, 1970s, into the 80s, like a Hasidic Rebbe. And the dress, the thinking, the Satmaruv, his anger at Rav Moshe, the Hasmona Levin Torah that he refused to go. Who is? Don't want to go further. Kvod Hashem Hastedaba. But see, the Rav was the exception to the rule. He did not change. And the reason is very simple. He was in Boston. He was in Brookline. he was part of the American scene. He used to say to the RCA Rabbanim, your questions are my questions. Your problems are my problems. The Rav was right. Everything reached him. He knew what was going on. He knew the street scene. He knew the achievement. And this is the answer to your question. And has it worked? Has it worked? Right, the Rav, I don't want to touch these topics because I'll lecture for another half year. The Rav had one home where he let his hair down. That was the home of Norma and Manny Holzer in Kew Gardens Hills. Whatever the reasons were, in Queens, with the Queens Mafia, the Rav felt totally at ease. So whenever there was a Sheva Brachas in the Holzer home for their children, for Schoenfeld's children, for Farmer was Shapiro, the Holzers were always entertaining. Norma Holzer should live and be well. She's a young lady in her early 90s. These are tzaddikim. They raise beautiful children, grandchildren. So one time the Rev lets his hair down and he says, I'm paraphrasing, but it's word by word the Rev. I can't tolerate what goes on today, that everyone dresses alike, thinks alike, everyone wants to just prove I'm as frum as you. He says, this cannot create good thinking, good Torah, chiddush in Torah. He says, the way to create Torah learning is we have to be different. No two people have to think alike. We have to be innovative. And he cites Reb Chaim, his grandfather. See, it's an entire different way of thinking. The Rav was upset. Everyone dresses alike. And I tell you, I can't help myself. Hold on, Yomo. I remember once driving home from Gruss, and there was a big funeral in Jerusalem. And I forget whose funeral, but... And all of Hebron was walking towards the funeral, like a few hundred students. And from the back, you couldn't tell anyone apart. Everyone, black, white, black, white, black, white. See, and I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I can't handle that. Different, beautiful. Give me a Lakewood boy. Give me a Chassid. Give me a YU boy. Give me a Chovavei Torah individual. I hope I have some Talmidim there who toe the mark. It's beautiful. Yes, Yomo.
What reason does Rebbe have to criticize Satmar for thinking differently then?
No, Satmar is a problem because they're Parish Menat Sibur.
Everyone has the right to think differently. And
Everyone has a right to think differently. Not Reformed Jews and not Conservative Jews. They don't think properly. Satmar is in their category. Please, you've studied me enough to understand that. I don't have to tell you the Rav of Parish Menat Sibur. But let me get back here. Now, this was very important. Rav Meir Shapiro insisted that the yeshiva should have Hasidic overtones. And you could be the brightest student in the world, but if you didn't dress Hasidish, he would not take you. This was Chok V'lo Ya'avar. The only exception he made, remember, academically he wanted it to be a place for giants of Torah. It's not for tyros, not for beginners. It's not a Jewish studies program. It's not the James Stryer School at YU. Hasidic dress. There was only one exception, and here I cite from the doctorate, very fascinating, very fascinating. And this takes us back to a question that everyone asked and everyone struggles with. I'm sitting here at this chair teaching Torah to so many people. Who am I? What am I? It's nothing to do with Yichus, nothing to do. No one in the world in YU, including myself, knew I was related to Rabbi Revel. And even if they would have known I was related to Rabbi Revel, so what? got to do it on your own merits. And this is the Litvisha world. And you can take two examples that I just mentioned a half hour ago, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and Rabbi Yankel Schiff. They became giants of Torah. Nothing to do with their forebears on their own. That's why when people say to me, Aaron Lichtenstein is the Rav son-in-law, I smack their face. I say, first say Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein is a goyim and a tzaddik. And then he happens to be the Rav son-in-law. Tell me, the Hasidic world. A yingle wakes up, a hot Hasidic yichus, an enikel, and he becomes a Rebbe. Okay? What's going on here? I can tell you there's a Chaim Shulson in America. He runs a website. He used to have a publication. He's a character. He's an Israeli. I know him. He was married, first marriage to a student of mine. He's a Chabad origins. Learned in Hebron. Wound up in South Florida, Miami Beach. You know his son is a multi-billionaire real estate. He, when Chabad has the Shlichim conference, he's one of the biggest donors. You see his name and he sponsors. So Shulchan, he before he went on to the website, the Olam Shel Charedim, I think it's called Olamam Shel Charedim. So he used to have a newspaper, and you paid him to keep your name out of it, or paid him to put your name in. But he has one thing there. I'll never forget that this person visited America, and he went into the Safmurov, and he visits him, and he says, "Oh, he knows how to learn it." He said, "I thought he doesn't know how to learn anything." You know, he said. So the old question. Just because you have yichus, that gives you the right to be a rebbe. The answer is very simple. No one forces a chassid to go to a specific rebbe. You're not pleased with the klezmer, you go to the satmi. If you satmi, you go to Lubavitch. I mean, are you my simi alum? But it's an interesting question. Reb Meir Shapiro, and you'll see the footnote in the documentation, when he got a request from a rebbe zazun, he always took them in. What was his thinking? That this kid is going to be a Rebbe no matter whether we like it or not. He has the yichus. At least let him be exposed to learning on a high level. He may not have the ability, may not become the Gon Hadar or the Tzaddik Hadar, but let him be exposed. These the Rebbeish at Kinderlach, he took in Pashit, even if it wasn't on the level that he would have normally accepted. And that's an interesting insight. And the truth is, I've seen this with my own eyes. Again, I don't want to mention names, but this kid grew up in the Bronx at Rebbeish HaZun, and I saw no hot shot, no nothing. And he has a shtibble today elsewhere where there's a large Jewish community. And my Talmidim tell me, they don't know that I know him as a kid. My Talmidim tell me, yeah, his shtibble is famous. Anyone who's thrown out of any shul, they wound up davening in his shtibble. You all right, as an Rebbe, a private shtick. But the Lisker Rebbe, you know, there were many Liskers. I don't say that Jackie Gleason's Rebbe was a Gadol Hador. Far from it. We once heard him, I remember Chaim Noble, my dear Chaim, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, Chaim Noble became an Adam Gadol, you know, he published Sparma on the highest level, Reb Lazer Silver writes in Das Kama, how impressed an American kid can reach this level of learning, Al Mamish Al Litvisha, raised in the Bronx. So Chaim Noble and I once are listening to the Lisker speak, and he misquoted a Mishnah. He didn't understand the Mishnah, pushed the words. So he didn't correct him. Chas v'chalil, we're afraid we get our heads chopped off. But he wasn't a Gadol Hadar. But our Rebbe, yeah, the yichus he has. Good he did. No two ways about it. So I can understand Reb Meir Shapiro. Now, there was something else about Yachal that also made him different. You see, you can understand where he has support and where he's being criticized. Chadash asum in HaTorah. Megalapanim b'torah shelo kalacha, what we spoke about last week. There was something else. He said Chachmei Lublin has to have a curriculum. Now here, you come to any Litvashi yeshiva, was there a curriculum? Not really. The Rosh Yeshiva decided what Masechet he would say Shirim on, and the students either could learn that Masechet and come to the Shiurim, or you could learn whatever you want, as long as you were learning and you were in the yeshiva, no one took attendance. It's not like a formal yeshiva with a structure. It has to have a curriculum. And he felt that, why was the curriculum necessary? Because he's getting students already that know Nezikin and know Nashim, know the Yeshiva Shem Sechtat. He introduced already Kodshim, Shabbos. Kodshim, you can understand, Zvachim, Menachat. This is all part of the tremendous reawakening of Zionism. You have no idea the impact that Zionism had. Mashiach, Zidkenu, the Chafetz Chaim, the Kailo Kodshim, Reb Mendel Zaks, Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. So the thrust was on Kodshim. This is the model of the Beis HaMikdash that was there. And they learned, and everyone had to learn the same Masechet. Why did he introduce Masechet Shabbat? Because the most shailas that any person will have, any Rav will have, will be in Masechet Shabbat. Your Adaya shailas, Chulin shailas, are very limited. Elu Treifat, we spoke about that yesterday, the Perek in Chulin. Where do you have shailas in Treifat? In a slaughterhouse, very rarely will you have it outside of the slaughterhouse. Years ago, where you took the chickens to the sheikhet to be shech, so then occasionally you would have shailas. Today, when's the last time a rav got a shaila with a chicken? You buy the chickens kashered, slaughtered, nivdak. In Israel, I even without mechadrin heksha, every chicken is checked. I remember Rabbi Zolti boasted that since Matan Torah, chickens have never been as kosher as they are today in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Tzalel Zolti. But Shabbos shailas you have all the time. All the time. And as technology develops, you have more shailas than ever. Whoever thought that there'd be a shaila about throwing out garbage on Shabbos? You follow me? The garbage can stand there. It tags us. So explain to me that it registers how much garbage is in the garbage can, and then they know how to pick it up, when to pick it up. Ribbono shel Olam. You can't throw out garbage. Now I think they have the special cans with Shabbos modes. There's no end to the technological shailas. Opening a window, the summer, the air conditioning, I don't have to tell you. When the heat is on a thermostat, the Frigidaire, what we have gone through, and the Frigidaire already, 1920s, you know how much, 100 years ago, you know how many tshuvot were written about the Frigidaire? You open the door, hot air comes in, you kick off the motor. How do you use it? Forget about the light. Now it turns out there's so many different problems with the Frigidaire, Baruch Hashem, in Israel, and now in America, General Electrics, they have a Shema Shabbos Frigidaire, GE. Put a lot of effort in. Of course, it'll pay them back. That opens up a whole new market. But that was part of the curriculum. But more than that, you have a terrific problem in yeshiva. Tell me, when's the last time that you studied Chumash in a yeshiva? You can be a gong in the Rabbanan, and an Amoritz Theoraita, that's, he quotes a footnote of someone saying that about yeshiva. Gemara, Shas, Paiskim. What was the joke that a Litvashi yeshiva bacha learns his chumash from the Gemara? When did you learn Chumash? When did you have a shir in Chumash? When did you do the Mefarshim? When did you have an approach? What about now? Reb Meir Shapiro gave a shir in Chumash in the yeshiva, and it opened the eyes of the students. There's more to a yeshiva than just shas and poskim. Yeah, the quote is, you could become a tzuva midrabanon and remain an amaretz midiorayta. Tzuva is the rabbinic word for aspiring Talmud Chacham, and he had a curriculum. He already saw to it that a student who would be in the yeshiva would be more broad, would have more knowledge. What's amazing is what I said to you last week, with all the Gemara and the Chumash and what he taught and the curriculum, there was no Hasidic class. See, here, he wanted every Chassid to feel at home. As long as you had a beard and payas and your tzitzit were out, and you dressed in a Hasidic fashion, didn't matter to him whether you were ger or breslov or tshutkov or what have you. But there was never Hasidic studies. Slavin doesn't analyze why, but I can understand it. I may be right, I may be wrong, but my educated understanding is he didn't want to offend anyone. The minute you get involved, Tanya, Svatemet, Rabbi Nachman, no, you're leaving out something. You want to do it on your own. Do it in your Rebbe's court. But Yachal, Hasidish, yes, but no sophistic or no specific sophisticated Hasidic text. That is up to you. Now you can understand with the stress on Kadshim why the model of the Beis HaMikdash was so important. What about exams? No formal exams. Once you passed the exam to get into the yeshiva, there were no formal exams. However, you had to talk and learning with the Rosh Yeshiva. You couldn't ignore Reb Meir Shapiro's presence. He already would speak to you, look at you. He understood what level you were on. A better student, he spoke with less. A good student, he less. A student who was Beinoni spoke with him more. You follow? He had his hands on the pulse. Now, to answer Morty's question, there were no gradations. As long as Reb Meir Shapiro lived, it was one yeshiva, one Rosh Yeshiva, one level of lectures. It absolutely resembled Kletz, Lakewood, Reb Aaron, to a certain degree, only a certain degree, Slabutka, Mir, one level. How Reb Meir Shapiro could do it all? Interesting question. And the tension, the time factor, this may all have contributed to his ill health. You know, when you're young, you're going to live forever and you think you're all powerful, can do anything. When you get older, you start to understand your limited strength, koiches, it's a Yiddish word, but don't forget that word. My Malcolm, my wife always says, her grandmother used to say, and she, my wife descends for some, literally tzaddikim, and they're in America much longer than my family. My wife has great-great-grandparents. We visited graves in Mount Hebron in Queens, great-great-grandparents buried in America. And her grandmother would always say, I don't have the strength. A young person doesn't understand that answer. I can see my daughters are bothering us to do things. We just can't. And Reb Meir Shapiro took all this on. Now, there was one exception that he dreamt about, and it never worked out. And I can understand this better than anyone else, because I lived it, meaning, I became very close to my Rebbeim. Already as a kid, I was close to Reb Geshen Yankelevich and Reb Hanuch Fishman. Then in high school, Reb Michal Katz. I gave away my last copy of Washington to Reb Michal Katz's great-grandson, who was studying here this past year. And I hope he appreciates it, you know, but he's a good kid, a frum kid, a great-grandson. I said, this was my first Rebbe in YU. 2 years I had him. Then I had Reb Yosef Weiss. Came very close. And Reb Yosef Weiss showed me a postcard he had. And this postcard, his most precious possession. Elliot, you know the postcard was from? The Ragged Sheva Gaon, Reb Yosef Weiss. You wrote a question to him, and he scribbled an answer, it took you half a year to figure out his train of thought. In Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, from the memoir literature, you get the impression the greatest moments were when students got answers to their questions from the Rocket Shuffle. Reb Yosef Rosen, the Rocket Sheva Gaon, and he was a Hasid. He was a Hasid. His origins were Hasidish. And Reb Meir Shapiro had a dream of bringing him to Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin and making him the Rosh Yeshiva. And that's a fascinating, fascinating little story. No telling how Chachmei Lublin would have developed had the Ragged Sheva come there, because he already was a Weltgong. The whole world, they knew the Ragged Sheva was one of a kind. If you've heard my lectures over the last, since the Kollel began in 78, and I deal with some of the responsible literature, the Ragged Sheva, he was way beyond the generation. That's why we don't paskin. You should know. If we would paskin like the Ragged Sheva, it'd be an entirely civil marriage would need to get shichru. You're familiar with that? I mean, that's beyond comprehension. But his mind was something else. The memoir literature on the Ragged Sheva, Gedolei Yisrael came in to talk with him and learning. And he got angry. He picked up a chair to throw it at them. They kenished Lerenin. He said to Reb Yitzchak Chanan, people repeat this. I asked him, Reb Chanan, can Lerenin a Taisvus Efsha? Maybe he understands a Taisvus. That's what he said to Reb Yitzchak Chanan. Reb Yitzchak was the post like a dog, but he was within normalcy. And he tried to bring in the Ragged Sheva, but it never worked out. Now, with the Ragged Sheva, you should know, we have memoir literature of Rabbanim, enlightened Rabbanim from England. They visit the Ragged Sheva. They expected to find the zoo, you know, the Ragged Sheva as wild, he's wild, he's an eel, he's a gone, he's this. You should know that his wife, 2 solid feet on the ground, well-groomed, took care of herself, took care of the house. People would walk in and they would walk out. They couldn't believe it. Everything around them is totally normal, except the Ragged Sheva. He's way beyond any normal concept of a mind of learning. The end of the Rakatshavitz said, you see, his son-in-law was Rav in Petach Tikva, and his Rebbetzin went back after the father died. I believe it was 38. You can check it out. I think I wrote about the Rakatshava. I got to look at Rakafar Aaron Chelik Aleph if I ever wrote about him for Jewish Life. And she went back to help put his manuscripts in order and to take them later publish. And she got caught in the Holocaust, Lo Aleinu. I mean, what Hitler did to us, it's, as I've told you more than once, I still am opposed that we took reparations, shilumim, the modern Hebrew word, from Germany. Now you look at me and argue and say, but it put Israel on the map financially. I don't know. We would have found another way. God wouldn't let us down, and we have Jewish billionaires today. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I can't change the way I think. And the Rakatshava was this tremendous dream, but it never worked out. What could have been, all right, if is the biggest word in the dictionary. So here you have a description of the yeshiva. It's not like any yeshiva we have today. If you went to Telz in Europe, Telz was the first yeshiva, totally innovative, a high school, a college, a seminary for women, gradations, many Rosh Yeshiva, Slabodka, Mir, you had Chabura, the whole concept of Chabura, that's where it began, because you had a Rosh Yeshiva, but not everyone was on the same level, not everyone was learning the same thing. You had diversity already. America goes without saying. Why you evolves from a high school to a college, Teira Vadas, a high school evolves into a Beis Medrash, Chaim Berlin. I mean, in any yeshiva that you know of, gradations, not Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, during the lifetime of the Maram Shapiro. He was the central, focal, dynamic figure. Everything centered around the Rosh Yeshiva. Mark, in answering your question, Rabbi Hutner later becomes the Rosh Yeshiva. Students out of the 60s, the 70s, they refer to him not as Rav Hutner, not as Rav Yitzchak, they refer to him the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva. Everything centered around him. And Vic, unfortunately, will bear testimony. Many of the top people from the old Chaim Berlin had to leave because it became totally Rebbe-oriented to a 80% degree. You follow? Lubavitch, Satmar, Kloisenberg, Bavel, Rav Hutner. Why you remained very different. And that you have to give credit to the Rav, the Soloveitchik family, the Rav. It was a different approach altogether. When you read the volume on Rabbi David Mishlom Soloveitchik, you'll see many similarities to the way he ran his classroom, to the way the Rav ran his classroom. Many similarities to their approach in learning. It was Reb Chaim in their blood. They couldn't distill Reb Chaim out of their blood. He was part and parcel. And then, that's why you, the Rav would get it, you know, the Rav, remember the story, and I tell the, my version is absolutely, I challenged Reb Heschel, I said, you're not remembering it properly. And I remember like yesterday, it's the Rav spent Shabbos in the yeshiva. This was a greater thing, not Boston and NYU. And all of the Bronx headed to Washington Heights that afternoon, the Shabbos afternoon, the Rav would give a talk. And then it comes to Meik Havdalah and Reese, Zichrono Levracha, was the Gabbai. These were tzaddikim. And he says, Rebbe, will act mechabed zayin, machen havdala, will be mechabed, you make havdala, and everyone should stand in the bay. And the Rav said, wie setzt mit mir, wer hat euch ausgelernt, was für Malach hat euch gegeben, the side from havdala mit dem Sitzen? We said, Rebbe, you gave a shiur at the Yahrzeit shiur a few weeks ago, and you said you have to sit. The Rav couldn't believe that we're listening to him, and if you would go then and say to the Rav, should I sit or stand? The Rav would say, tell me what your father, zog me was ayakata to. What does your father stands, you stand. Goes against the whole shiur the Rav gave. But that was the Rav, it was so different. Okay, let me end off with one beautiful story. And I know the person involved, I taught his daughter or daughters in Michola. Rabbi Shapiro asked the student Shmuel Tanchum Rubinstein. He survives the Holocaust, becomes a famous rabbi in Israel. I believe he's involved with the Rambam La'am. Check who the author is. Rabbi Shapiro asked the student Shmuel Tanchum Rubinstein whether he knew the whole tractate of humor by heart. Student said, yes. So I asked him, Rabbi Shapiro asked him, how many times was the name Rav Adabar Abba mentioned in the Masechet? Rubinstein answered, this name is mentioned four times and listed them as being on page 14a, 6b, 44a, 44b. And Rabbi Shapiro says to him, tell me, did you learn chapter 7? And the young kid answers, no, I haven't learned that chapter yet. Only later, when Rubinstein looked in the last chapter and found that the name appeared one more time on page 72b. So that's already a beautiful story. And it shows you, he said, did you learn the 7th chapter? And the kid says, no, because he left that one time. And that time was in the 7th chapter. And you see, that's the Maram Shapiro, and that's the type of students, that's the type of students they had. Is it good to have only students like that? You need a unique place. Hawaii, the Rav would have come in Aliyah, and Gurs, what we would have had here today, we would be the shining light of the Torah world. But the Rav would have to have been 39 years of age at the time, not 79. You follow? And all right, we do the best we can. And nitma'atu hadarat, you understand? In my time, when I was a Rebbe, every student knows this out of the 60s. If I caught you with a Hansino, I put it in the closet, I put your name in it, they said you get it back in June, you'll thank me, because now you have to struggle to learn the tough. Today, which kid doesn't have a Schottenstein? You follow? And you don't take it away, it's part of learning, it is the way they learn. No, you saw what I read yesterday with the Gemara, I read how Schottenstein explains it, you know, summarized, and it's very good, very good. I have students made panasar out of working for Art Scroll with Shas. Very good. But nitnatu adarat, you see, this kid reaches the age of 21, 22, and he's overwhelmed with the Shulchan Aruch, with the Hebrew, and the Shach, the Taz, the Prima Gadim. Okay. Nitma'atu adarat. But the main thing is Torah has to keep moving. And when you look at the pictures and the videos of the young boys and girls dancing on Yom Yerushalayim, it warms your heart. We've done miracles after the Holocaust, what we have rebuilt, Kanein Hara. We have to be very proud, and we have to go further, and more, and more, and love of Torah, love of Eretz Yisrael and love of Am Yisrael. And there's very moving advertisements in the religious papers, at least in my world, and the Alonim, Shvuas Va'ahavta Metageh. What have you done to show your love for a convert And this is beautiful. Just beautiful. Look at Ruth, Hamoaviah. Your God is my God. Your land is my land. Your people are my people. Overwhelming. She chose correctly. And Mashiach Tzidkenu comes from her. Just think. Okay. And Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu. I hope I've given you a little bit feeling. We'll pick up next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, a little bit more about the Meir Shapiro and what happens afterwards. This is always the problem when you have a very unique individual who can succeed him. It's always the problem. You take Rabbi Riskin. Remember what I said yesterday, it's absolutely correct. In New York, there was no one to succeed him. It all fell apart outside of the shul, and the shul took years till Rabbi Robinson finally, the shoe fit the foot. Today, they don't even know Rabbi Riskin was rabbi there. That's the biggest compliment to him. In Israel, you have people. Rabbi Kenny Brander, terrific individual. But more than that, the Israelis that are around all that he built in the schools, and they continue. All right, this is an achievement. The Rav, see, he was ill. The 70s, he was going downhill already. So it gave YU a chance to adjust. And you have Baruch Hashem in YU, top quality people who come to the fore, Rabbi Schechter, Tversky, Willie, etc., Reichman, Kahn, each one, students, role models, you can find your way. But here you're talking, it's like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, no successor. And you know what Rakefet told the biggest Lubavitcher people, my dear friends, including Label Groner, I said, you're all making a mistake. The Rebbe was not the Rebbe back in 1950. Give it a chance. You gotta choose someone who has the koach, the ability, who grow with the position. See, people don't understand that. I just told someone last night, I'm working on Dr. Belkin, I'm the second chapter finishing. I said, Dr. Belkin's greatest achievement, that he enabled the Rav to become the Rav. The people looking, what are you talking about? What am I talking about? The Rav wanted to be president, the Rav wanted the Rav. Could you imagine what would have become of Moriah Rebbe had he been elected president of YU? Dr. Belkin said to him, Beryl, your only responsibility, I'm einzig achrayus, is mit the Talmidim. The geld velich shafim, the money I'm going to raise for the yeshiva, you just deal with the Talmidim. And the Rav became the Rav. I will not repeat what he was first called in YU, what they call him in Satma today. J, period. I don't want to go further. Nothing bad, but it's not covered. They called him that in YU. By the late 40s, they'd smack your face if you said, the Rav became the Rav. My dear students, first of all, I want to thank you for your wonderful participation. Secondly, I want to thank the big crowd on the screen. Thirdly, I want to remind you that next Sunday there is no shir. Okay? Celebrate Isru Chag in Chicago and New York and regain your breath here from Yontif, Shabbos being Isru Chag. And those of you that are going to be back in America later this year are going to have a big problem because the laning changes. We become, to quote that Satma in Muncie, we are two different religions. We're on one Pasha and you're on a different Pasha. Are there any questions from, and the next week afterwards, I pick up Sunday's the most important Shia, bringing rupture and reconstruction to life. In the Tshach, you'll see what I'm giving you, and Reb Menashe Klein, Wow, and I'll explain the one, I'll tie it all together. I apologize for giving a shiur in Yoredeya, but I wish I knew when I was a kid studying Yoredeya what I know today. Oh, I would have had a, would have been able to master it so much better, so much profoundly. But that's life. You can't be young and old at the same time, although we try. Are there any questions? Yomo, open it to the world. Look at these wonderful people. Yes?
Recording stopped.
What?
Rabbi Robinson.
Right?
When I was, a couple weeks ago, I was in Lincoln Square. I went to daven in the morning. Not the shamus, not the gabbai.
Right.
He walks in, he sees me. He comes over to me to say hello. I didn't know who he was. You know, I knew the name, but I never seen him. He came over to me to welcome me.
He really caught on there. Send him my regards. He's the Talmud of Reb Chaim Bravender. It's another name that has been forgotten here. Herbie Bravender is one of the great mechanchim who came in Aliyah to Israel and made many contributions here. But he had one problem. He would build and leave. Build and leave. There's Aaron Adler. They all say, there's a guy, Rakefet. He doesn't leave. He doesn't budge. He's there. He remains. Baruch Hashem.
Rabbi Bravender was my counselor in Gillette, Pennsylvania.
Ah.
In
Camp Mosheva, Gilad.
Camp Mosheva in 1957.
I was in Gilad, Pennsylvania. Wow. You bring back memories. Okay, are there any questions from around the world?
Rebbe, it was pointed out, the the Rav, there's a story that he asked Rav Cook.
Who are you talking about, asked Rav Cook?
What?
Who asked Rav Cook?
The Rav asked Rav Cook about whether he should keep 2 days of Yom Tov or not when he was in Israel. So it was Shavuot. So he says, Rav Cook told them make Aliyah or whatever, but it's interesting, that year somebody looked it up, was the same as this year. It was a Friday Shabbat.
Nachum, let me cut you off and tell you, I spoke with the Rav about this very question. And the Rav said to me, what do you mean, Rav Cook? Rav Cook was critically ill when the Rav was there. I don't believe the Rav asked him. The Rav asked Rav Moshe, his father, okay? And his father said to him, in the name of Rav Chaim, the Chacham Tzvi is gerecht, totally correct. And Rav Moshe told him, this year you will have no problem with Malacha, because the second day is Shabbos. It's exactly like now, 1935. Look it up in a 100-year calendar, 200-year calendar. And he said, but davening, you daven like an Israeli. And the Rav Paskind Lahalacha, 1 day here, 2 days there, nothing to do with where your mind or membership is. Now, I ask Rebbe, so how come we Paskin a day and a half l'chumra, and the Rav, I'll tell you, I said it, and the Rav said, you're absolutely right. I said, one reason is, very simple, you have to give cover to the Shulchan Aruch. And this leads to lectures I gave that should be on YU Torah. Do we have the right to Paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? Okay? Medaf up and cover. The second reason is, and this, I think, was the real reason of a Paskin a day and a half. A graduate of Maimonides goes to Israel. If they keep only 1 day, they can come back to America and be Mezalzel and Yom Tov Sheni. V'hayu ma'asim le'olam, I refer to Staten Island. So the Rav said a day and a half l'chumra. But that's, you should know, Me'ika Hadin, the Rav Paskin like the Chacham Tzvi. And that leads to Rav Heschel Shecht, who got into a trouble. Everyone's yelling at him because he Paskins, I don't know how he differs with the Rav, but the right, he's Rav Heschel, has a right to differ. He Paskins 2 days if you're going back to Queens. So Paskin, then there was a story with the coast, people going from the coast, and the family, and they contact Rav Heschel, and the parents are keeping only 1 day here, and they're done. Children want to keep 2 days, and it's interrupting all their plans. So Rav Heschel said, all right, you can keep 1 day. So everyone jumped on him, and all right, at that moment, he remembered who his Rebbe was, and he paskin like the Rav, plain and simple. I paskin lahalacha, when anyone asked me, I said, do you want me to justify your opinion, or do you want a psak? If you want me to justify your opinion, I want to hold 2 days, so that dummy Rakefet will give you a 2-hour lecture why you must absolutely hold 2 days. A guy will say 1 day. Rakefet will then drive him crazy for 2 hours why you have to hold only 1 day. And then if you want a psak, I always pass in a day and a half l'chumra. The problem with Yontif Sheni is there's no solution. If you're machmir, you're mekil. And if you're mekil, you're machmir. And believe me, I'm driving my car, playing with my computer, and you're davening musaf and saying kiddush, I still can't comprehend it. Ending off with the Rav and memories of Irvin Shapiro, I told you this 1,000 times over. Irvin Shapiro bought an apartment in the plaza. He said, Rebbe, I'm going to Eretz Yisrael for Pesach. I was at the Seder at the plaza that year for Pesach. It was with Irvin, a private Seder. And the Rav says, he asked the Rav 1 day, 2 days, the Rav says, Irvin, you can't fold Kedusha into your pocket. And boy, no one could ever say that better. What the Rav was saying, how can you keep 2 days? You're taking Kedusha of the Upper East Side and bringing it to Israel? Israel, it's cold. New York, it's kadosh. And I have a million things more to say on this, but another class is coming in very quickly. Any more questions? Jack, yeah?
The Nusach Tefillah in the yeshiva, is there anything interesting to say about the Nusach Tefillah that they use?
What Nusach Tefillah are you referring to? In there? We'll talk about that next week. But Halacha L'maisa was, he always allowed different minyanim. For instance, Breslov. It was very rare that the whole yeshiva would daven together. And we'll talk about something next week about Ger. Very fascinating. It's very fascinating. But leave it for next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. But basically, they daven Nusach Svad, which is the Nusach that unifies almost all the Hasidim, outside of Chabad, that davens Nusach Ari. Erloy also?
Nusach Ashkenaz.
They daven Ashkenaz, Erloy, because they're from Hungary, they're Ashkenazim, they're Ashkenazim. Yeah, that makes sense. But I'll admit my sins. I daven Ashkenaz, but I have already grandsons whose Nusach is Sfad, and I have grandsons because here in Bnei Akiva, Nusach Sfad has won out. And the reason it's won out is exactly the reason why the Hasidim daven Nusach Sfad. It is part of the great rebellion against what was before. The Sfadim were rebelling against the Ashkenazim that they don't like Hasidim. Oh, we're going to teach you. We're a different religion than you, to quote that Satma dummy. And my grandchildren, Bnei Akiva's rebelling against the Gullus Jew. You follow the Gullus Jew, you're allowed to rebel. It's a beautiful rebellion. It's my rebellion. I became an Israeli 53 years ago. Subconsciously put me on the couch. There's no question it's a rebellion. But there's no big problem with Nusach Sfad and Nusach Ashkenaz. It's very minor changes. Ketne Yitnu Lecha. I love Ketne Yitnu Lecha, by the way. I wish the Ashkenazim would say it too. But Nusach Ari already has more Kabbalistic overtones. And if I hope to get to it with Ramesh, you'll see how that plays a bit of a role in what happens after his death. Jack, I want to thank you for your kind words about my Sheyurim. It's deeply appreciated. And with the dish, you'll understand everything next year in the Sunday class. All right, if there are no more questions...
Can I say another kind thing about your shiurim?
Please.
Okay, I every once in a while go back 10, 20 years to hear the shiurim from decades ago. Even though I can say I was there. It's very kedai for people to do that. But not only because, how can you remember, how can anybody remember from 10, 20 years ago? There's so much wonderful material there. And also, every once in a while, you will say something extremely interesting, and you never repeat it again. And I should write these things down and tell you that, you know, why something phenomenal you say and then you go on and it's never, I never heard of it.
Well, I only repeat what left the deep scars upon me. There's certain experiences I had in life that scarred me. But all right, you know, you live, you ride with the waves. But I have to tell you, on one issue I was wrong. Living 53 years in Israel, I had not been wrong in calling this what's happening here. As you see with angels' bread and the Tachnit HaLiba and Tzahal, I called the shot right before it broke, and people looked at me in Beit Shemesh. I'm overstating the case. Baruch Hashem.
You must say something that's really gewaltig and so interesting. I said, wow. And then if I hadn't listened to that share from 25 years ago, that's it.
All right, but I have to tell you, one shot I was absolutely wrong. I predicted many decades ago Shas would not survive the passage of time. And there I was totally wrong. And why did I predict that? Because my Avat Yisrael, I couldn't see Sfadim and Ashkenazim arguing continually, and they're still around. I'm very proud to say that in my family, most of my granddaughters-in-law, at least half, maybe more, are all Eidat HaMizrach, Baruch Hashem. But there I was wrong. It's the only time I made a prediction like that, and I was absolutely wrong. Levi, I want you to know I got an email from Michael, which I don't understand. I think he may have wanted to come see me this morning at 8 o'clock. I don't know. So I don't believe he's here after today, but all right, we'll worry about that at another time. What do you want
to
show?
I would like to present this to Rebbe. It's a contrast, Nu Kavod LaTorah, it's in defense of Bekiyas from both sides of Litvish and Hasidish, with endless sources from Gedolei HaDor.
Who wrote this?
I don't know who wrote this, but he has come.
Shimon Fierce.
I don't know who he is, but he has Haskamas from these people.
All right.
And both sides of the aisle.
Both sides of the aisle. Okay, we'll look at it.
Litvish and Hasidish.
I appreciate it. All I can say is when Litvish and Hasidish get together, we can bring in the Sfardim and the Ethiopians. It's the miracle of Kibbutz Galyat. In my family, it's my elder son-in-law's family. His niece, who's pure Ashkenazia, married an Ethiopian young man who is in Kurs Katsinim in the Tzava, and Tzadik B'chol Ma'asav. And we were speaking about it. That's the ultimate dream of what we have to achieve here. All right, well, let's hope Mashiach Tzidkenu is not far away, Be'ezrat Hashem. Until we meet again in health. By the way, a very happy Shavuos. I have the students who, if they count the 49 days, their grandmothers would give them very good cheesecake as a reward. So I hope everyone is, and make a bracha yet, to count the 49 days and still be able to make a bracha. I have no problem because I daven in shul. And Baruch Hashem, I've had cheesecake many, many decades now.
Where did cheesecake? Did they have cheesecake in
Europe? Evidently in Germany they had. Of course, this is Eli Schlesberg, who tells me the story time and again, that his grandmother would make a special cheesecake. And he, if you counted 49 days with a bracha, you were zeicha. Until we meet again in health and happiness, a guten Yontev, Chag Sameach, Das Vidanya. Oh.